Hello and welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 categories smart. You're listening to The Life Note, The Art of Loving, by Eric Fromm and summarized by Emily Snyder. As always, we'll begin with a quote. To love someone is the actualization and concentration of the power to love. In this enlightening book, Eric Fromm, a celebrated psychoanalyst and social psychologist, teaches us the theory and practice of love. Naming it as the only answer to the problem of human existence, he encourages us to cultivate our capacity for love in our own lives. Let's start with the first big thought, love as an attitude, three limiting beliefs. Quote, is love an art? Then it requires knowledge and effort, end quote. This is the question that Eric Fromm opens his book with, although we can already guess what the answer is by the book's title. The funny thing is, however, that most people see love as something that happens by chance, a pleasant sensation that we fall into if we're lucky. And it's not that people don't think love is important. In fact, we see it as very important. It's something we're starved for. We watch sappy movies about love and read trashy novels about love and follow celebrity love on social media. Yet so few people actually acknowledge that there is something very valuable we need to learn about and from love. Fromm tells us that this attitude is based on several premises that we consciously or unconsciously believe in. Let's take a look at these before we dig into the meat of this book to put ourselves in the right frame of mind. First, most people tend to think about love primarily in terms of being loved instead of one's capacity to give love. The problem then becomes one of how to be lovable. We humans do a lot of strange things in the pursuit of this aim. Some of us dedicate our lives to pursuing power, wealth, and personal success. Others of us are consumed with making ourselves attractive. It also places the importance on how much we are getting instead of how much we are giving, which, when it comes to love relationships, can be a fatal flaw. The second premise is the assumption that love is a problem of the object, not of the faculty. By this, Fromm means that people see the act of love as simple, but the finding of the right object to love and be loved by as difficult. And so more importance is placed on finding the right or the perfect person to love, as opposed to cultivating our capacity to love in general. The third premise stems from the confusion between falling in love and being in love. This premise is closely related to the second in that it also implies that love is easy, when in fact sustaining it is one of the most difficult challenges we face in life. Despite the fact that we've seen love as difficult, whether in our lives or in the lives of others, the common perception is that when it happens easily. Quote, there is hardly any activity, any enterprise which is started with such tremendous hopes and expectations, and yet which fails so regularly as love, end quote. Interestingly, in all other aspects of our lives, when something fails, we're eager to learn the reason why and figure out how we can do better next time, or we give up trying altogether and move on to the next project. Since we usually cannot do the latter when it comes to love, Fromm insists that there is only one way to overcome the failure of love, to examine the reasons why it fails, and to deeply study its meaning. Hence, we must recognize that love is an art. Quote, if we want to learn how to love, we must proceed in the same way we have to proceed if we want to learn any other art, say music, painting, carpentry, or the art of medicine or engineering, end quote. There are two parts to learning an art, mastering the theory and mastering the practice. But Fromm tells us there is also a third part. The mastery of an art must be an ultimate concern. We must devote ourselves wholeheartedly to mastering the art of love. To get started, we'll see what Fromm has to say about the theory of love and then move on to its practice. The next big thought is the theory of love, an existential answer. Quote, any theory of love must begin with a theory of man or human existence, end quote. First, Fromm addresses the theory of love, which he divides into three parts. The first of these, and the logical place to start, deals with a theory of human existence. According to the author, quote, what is essential in the existence of man is the fact that he has emerged from the animal kingdom, from instinctive adaptation, that he has transcended nature, although he never leaves it, end quote. Put a little more simply, we as humans are part of this world, but we're set apart from the rest of the animal kingdom by one very crucial thing. We have a unique ability to tap into logic and reason, and because we possess that capability, we are also self-aware. We're aware of the fact that we are separate entities from one another, that our lives are finite. From this awareness stems a feeling of loneliness and separation. Furthermore, Fromm tells us, this experience of separateness causes anxiety, all forms of anxiety, according to him. It is only natural, then, that one of the deepest human needs is to overcome this feeling of separateness and find unity. All we have to do is take a look around us, and we'll see evidence of the ongoing struggle to overcome feelings of aloneness. We look for answers in all manner of places, be it religion, philosophy, sex, drugs, our careers, or even just our daily routines. We can achieve partial unity through these channels, but Fromm contends that the only full answer to our predicament lies in interpersonal union, which is a fancy way of saying coming together with another person in love. Our desire for interpersonal union is perhaps our strongest desire. Quote, it is the most fundamental passion. It is the force which keeps the human race together, the clan, the family, the society. End quote. But a complication arises when we speak of love. The question of which type of love are we talking about? Many people tend to think of love in more immature terms, which Fromm terms symbiotic union, which exists in two forms. The passive form manifests as someone who makes themselves a part of someone else in order to feel unity, who submits to someone else. The active form is just the opposite, someone who seeks to escape loneliness by making someone else part and parcel of themselves. This is not how Fromm views true love. Instead, he tells us that love should be understood as the mature answer to the problem of existence. In contrast to the type of unions described above, Fromm urges us to think of love as a union under the condition of preserving our individuality. Instead of being simple, love carries with it an innate paradox. In mature love, two beings become one and yet remain two. Before we move on to the second part of the theory of love, we need to understand that love is primarily about giving, not receiving, and that the character of love always implies a few basic elements: care, responsibility, respect, and knowledge. We show care and concern for the one we love, and because we are concerned for them, we feel a voluntary responsibility to respond to their needs. That responsibility could morph into domination pretty easily if not for respect and our ability to see the one we love as a unique individual. Finally, it's impossible to respect someone without really knowing them. The other three elements would be blind without knowledge, and knowledge would be empty if it were not motivated by the other three elements. The next big thought is a mother's love, reasons for loving. Quote, mother is warmth, mother is food, mother is the euphoric state of satisfaction and security. End quote. The second facet of Fromm's theory of love is concerned with the love between parents and children. At the moment of birth, babies are little more than what they were right before they were born. They don't recognize objects or entities, and they are not aware of themselves. They only know the positive sensations of warmth and food, and they do not distinguish those positive feelings from the source, mom. Eventually, babies grow and develop the ability to perceive things as they are. They begin to experience themselves and their mother as separate entities and gradually learn to perceive how their behaviors affect their mother, that she will smile when the baby eats or pick it up when it cries. And eventually, these experiences crystallize and become integrated as one single experience, the experience of being loved. According to Fromm, before the age of about 8 to 10, the problem is almost exclusively that of being loved. But after that age, a new factor enters the picture. At about 8 to 10 years old, a child develops the new feeling of producing love on their own, not merely receiving it. This is when kids start to think of giving things to their parents, like a poem or a drawing. Quote, for the first time in the child's life, the idea of love is transformed from being loved into loving, into creating love. End quote. Infantile love follows the principle, I love because I'm loved. And mature love follows the principle, I am loved because I love. Closely related to developing this capacity to love is the development of the object of love. Children are first attached to their mothers, but as they grow, their attachment to their fathers become increasingly important. Fromm says that these two loves serve separate but complementary purposes. Quote, mother has the function of making him, the child, secure in life. Father has the function of teaching him, guiding him to cope with those problems with which the particular society the child has been born into confronts him. End quote. Obviously, this is a very gendered statement, and the lines between mother and father are not always so stark, but it does sum up nicely the function of a parent's, any parent's, love for their children. Eventually, everyone grows up and sort of becomes their own mother and father. As adults, Fromm tells us we carry a motherly and a fatherly conscience, one that reassures us of our security and capacity to love and be loved, and one that urges us to learn from our mistakes. To a large degree, we detach from our external parents and instead internalize their associations. In the same vein, we also develop the capacity to love with a both motherly and fatherly conscience. The next big thought is the capacity for love and the objects of affection. Quote, love is not primarily a relationship to a specific person. It is an attitude, an orientation of character that determines the relatedness of a person to the world as a whole, not toward one object. End quote. The love Fromm refers to is not a single relationship to one specific person. It's more of a character trait or an inner capacity that helps us determine how we relate to the world as a whole. If we only loved one other person and ignored everyone else, we would not have the type of mature love that we learned about earlier in this note. Instead, we would have a symbiotic attachment. Fromm argues that if we truly love one person, we love all persons, the world, and our lives. But this isn't to say that there are no differences between various types of love. The author goes on to describe some of these types. There's brotherly love. This type of love underlies all other types. It is the most fundamental type. It is the sense of responsibility, care, respect, and knowledge that we discussed earlier. Brotherly love is the type of love that is embodied in the saying, love your neighbor as yourself. Quote, brotherly love is for all human beings. It is characterized by its very lack of exclusiveness. End quote. If we've cultivated the ability to love, this is a type of love we experience. The next type of love Fromm describes is motherly love. It is unconditional affirmation of a child's life and needs, which has two parts. First, it is the care and responsibility required for the preservation of the child's life. Second, it is the responsibility to instill in the child a love for life. As opposed to brotherly love, which is a love between equals, motherly love is by its very nature a love of inequality, of the nurturer and the nurtured. We might think that this is the easiest type of love to achieve. How could we not love our own kids, right? But Fromm actually believes it is the most difficult because it is the most unselfish kind of love there is. Loving a growing child means striving for that child's separation and independence, which can be incredibly difficult. Finally, we get to erotic love or intimate love. Like brotherly love, erotic love is a love between equals. But unlike both brotherly and motherly love, it tends to be confined to one person at a time, although not always. Erotic love is the craving for complete fusion with another person, and it's probably the most deceptive form of love there is. Fromm tells us it is far too often confused for the feeling of falling in love. We yearn for that moment when all the walls come down and we feel incredibly close and intimate with another person. But in many, many cases, this honeymoon period is short-lived and fades easily. And so we seek out a new flame to ignite the passion, only to meet the same fate once again. As we would suspect, sexual desire plays an important role in erotic love. Fromm tells us that we can easily be misled to believe we love someone when we want them physically, but without true love, the union that sex achieves is just an illusion. Quote, erotic love, if it is love, has one premise: that I love from the essence of my being and experience the other person in the essence of his or her being. End quote. Finally, there is love for ourselves. There is a common misconception that self-love is the same as selfishness. Fromm sets us straight on this point. These two things are, in fact, polar opposites. Selfish people possess very little love for themselves or others. This lack of love leaves the selfish person empty and unhappy. Those of us who enjoy self-love, on the other hand, have a greater capacity for loving others, resulting in a happier, more fulfilled existence. The next big thought, love's demise, modern pseudo-love. Quote, if love is a capacity of the mature, productive character, it follows that the capacity to love in an individual living in any given culture depends on the influence this culture has on the character of the average person, end quote. In Fromm's view, modern Western civilization is not conducive to the development of mature love. He maintains that objective observers wouldn't doubt that true love, brotherly, motherly, and erotic, is a relatively rare occurrence, and that instead is replaced with forms of pseudo-love. He points to our capitalistic society, which he says reduces workers to cogs in a machine and robs them of the individuality that is so crucial to love. This is an attitude that carries over into marriage. To have a successful marriage, we're told that we should be cooperative, tolerant, and understanding. That all looks well and good on the surface, but Fromm says if all we are doing is understanding one another and making each other feel better, essentially we are just really good roommates. There's no real intimacy. Another way love is misconstrued is as mutual sexual satisfaction. However, love does not result from sexual satisfaction. On the contrary, love produces sexual happiness. These are the two main ways Fromm sees love disintegrating in Western society. The last big thought is the practice of love, the mastering of an art. Quote, can anything be learned about the practice of an art except by practicing it? End quote. Now that we've gone through Fromm's multifaceted discussion of the theory of love, it's time to take a look at the practice of love. He admits that describing this is difficult. There's no prescription for how to love. Loving is a very personal experience that is different for every single person, but he does give us a few guidelines. The practice of any art has a few general requirements. First, practicing an art requires discipline. We will never be good at anything if we don't practice it in a disciplined way. Second, concentration is necessary for mastering an art. Third, and closely related to the first two, is patience. Mastering an art takes time, and we won't see the fruits of our labor right away. Finally, perhaps the most important guideline for mastering an art is that we must make it our supreme concern. If we don't hold our art to the utmost importance, we will never learn it. Those are the necessary qualities for mastering any art, but Fromm does give us a few qualities that are specific to practicing love as well. The first and perhaps most important is our ability to overcome our narcissism. We have to look outside ourselves and see the world more objectively. Going hand in hand with overcoming narcissism is the development of humility. The next quality that Fromm says is necessary for practicing love is rational faith, or convictions that are rooted in our own experiences. Quote, rational faith is rooted in an independent conviction based upon one's own productive observing and thinking in spite of the majority's opinion, end quote. In order to truly love, we must have faith in others and in ourselves. And finally, practicing love requires courage. We must be willing to take a risk and even to accept any pain and disappointment that we will inevitably endure. So there we have it. Erich Fromm's guide to cultivating a deeper capacity to love in our own lives. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.